doing the comedy hour, and I hope my friend is getting one laugh a minute, because can you imagine when those 10,000 Moonies procreate and we have 50,000 little Moonies of parents selected by Reverend Moon, and then they go out and have four or five more? It's going to be pretty funny. That is pretty funny that people this day and age will go to him and let him say, "This is your new partner," and they will take the advice and have mass wedding ceremonies and go out and serve the Lord according to Reverend Moon. Well, we're going to jump now to some more laughs. Kennedy assassination is always in the news, and that's pretty funny because the Warren Commission and Earl Warren and J. Edgar Hoover thought that they could end the story of the Kennedy assassination very quickly. All they had to say within an hour was, "Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone," and you were supposed to believe that. When Lyndon Johnson was on Air Force One coming back to Washington, D.C., he was told from the White House, "We have the assassin. It was Lee Harvey Oswald and no conspiracy." Well, it is pretty funny that after 17 years, there isn't hardly a day that goes by in the newspaper that there isn't information and more stories about the Kennedy assassination. And again, Jack Anderson was coming through this week. He was into the Angola CIA. He was into the Afghanistan opium, a poppy crop cut off by the Russians. And he's had a lot of good articles. Another one he had this week, he talks about the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And he said that they were blaming, the FBI was blaming the acoustics for being in error, that actually there were only a certain amount of shots at Dealey Plaza, and Lee Harvey Oswald did them, and there was no other gunman at the grassy knoll. But along comes Anderson, and then he says, "The FBI claims that the House committee does not prove that the recorded sounds came from the assassination scene. Yet a transcript of the Dallas Police Dispatcher's radio transmission makes it clear the sounds were from the Dealey Plaza area, which would support the researchers' allegations based upon the ballistic evidence, the clothing, and the bullets, and the position of John Kennedy's head when it was blown off, etc., and where the assassin was sounding, the sounds they heard, and where people ran to the hill." It's 17 years later, and the good old boy Jack Anderson is changing sides now and saying it is clear the sounds were from the Dealey Plaza area and not where the prestigious Warren Commission said from the Texas School Book Depository building. Now, the FBI's insistence, according to Jack Anderson, was that no conspiracy was involved. And this idea, he said, stemmed from a memo sent by Director J. Edgar Hoover sent to President Johnson in his office 2 days after John Kennedy was murdered. And this is what Hoover wrote: "The thing I'm concerned about is having something issued so we can convince the public that Oswald is the real assassin, just as they convinced the public that Sirhan was the real assassin of Robert Kennedy when it was Thane Caesar. They would like to convince the public." But the important thing about this article, written December 29th, 1980, is that 17 years later, tomorrow, the people who were born in 1962, 1 year before John Kennedy was assassinated, must go to their post office and sign up for a draft. And the chances are that generation is going to go to war. That was 1 year before John Kennedy was killed. We've been working at this to illustrate that there was a military takeover and that the purpose of killing John Kennedy was to escalate those wars for which you will register tomorrow if you were born in 1962. If we had the cooperation of your congressmen and your assemblymen and your mothers and fathers and priests and rabbis, you might be spared the war that you're facing. But for 17 years, a handful of people have stood here and dug up the facts. And if we didn't do it, Jack Anderson wouldn't print it now. But the fact is that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't kill anybody. And you're going to register for a war that isn't necessary. And we will never win. There's no way we can win it. But you're going out as cannon fodder to fight their war. If you clean up the mess at home, you won't have to go fight it over there and if you don't clean it up here, you're going to find it there. In other articles in the past weeks, a file on Oswald Rifle, the FBI agent, says, I'm going into these later on the Kennedy assassination and update the details for you, but James Hostey, an FBI man that worked with Marina Oswald and Ruth Payne, women working with the Defense Department and Navy Intelligence, Hostey worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, worked with those wives at the house where Oswald stayed on his weekends. He met with them twice before the assassination. They were making their deals and plans for the cover-up and also for the possible getaway of Lee Harvey Oswald when that poor double would be gunned down and later the grave would be emptied out, and they don't dare open that up. A lawsuit still pending on that. Another large article by Earl Goltz that I'll share with you, Hoover's Vendetta targeted the Dallas police. J. Edgar Hoover was so angry at comments that the Dallas police made right after the assassination that they were familiar with Lee Harvey Oswald's activities, that they weren't invited to the police academy, the FBI academy, for 2 years. He ignored them and was furious because of the controversies that rose up and had an official boycott of the city police officers of all of Dallas after they gave a statement that they knew Oswald was capable of committing the assassination. Oswald wasn't capable and hadn't fired a gun, but what they made it look like was that the FBI knew that he could do it and goofed, and Hoover didn't want that. And besides that, it brought more controversy than if it had just been this lone nut that the FBI didn't know about in advance. Hoover was worrying about the fact, as he said to Lyndon Johnson, that people would worry and not think Oswald did it. And as soon as the FBI said, oh, we knew who he was and he was capable of it, that meant that they weren't doing their work, and Hoover was furious. James Hostey, the gentleman who worked with Lee Oswald's wife and with Ruth Payne, as I say, of the Defense Department, he surfaced after 17 years to try to bring in a Lee Harvey Oswald Russian spy story again, as if we knew he was a Russian spy, but they kept information from me and took it from my desk. And I will go in, as I say, into the details of this also later with you, but I want you to watch the articles on the Kennedy assassination and realize that the Robert Kennedy story, the Martin Luther King, the John Kennedy assassination items are still very much in the news and always will be until the full truth is told. There was an important series of articles on Nazi developments, and I have to interweave these weekly or very often, the Nazi stories with the assassination research, because as I got farther into my research, the people involved in killing John Kennedy, members of organized crime, the Defense Department, the FBI, were working with Nazi assassination teams in Mexico and in South America. Kennedy was offed by a team of gun running, narcotic traffic, Nazi connections that all interweave. And wherever you go, new evidence is coming up linking these connections throughout the country to South America, Switzerland, Swiss banks, and the assassination teams. Now, I refer to the military coup that took place November 22nd, 1963, when John Kennedy was murdered. Kennedy was elected, and then he was murdered, and the military took over all decisions of the government and maneuvered the presidents from that point on. In Germany, Adolf Hitler was elected president of Germany. He came in on an election just as Ronald Reagan has come in on an election. And right after he was elected, there was that famous Reichstag fire that I've referred to many, many times that took place February 27, 1933. Well, at the time of the Reichstag fire, that Reichstag is the government building in Germany, similar to our White House in Washington, D.C. Adolf Hitler used that as an excuse to round up all labor organizers, all social workers, all people against Nazism. And the excuse was that a gentleman named Van der Lubbe, L-U-B-B-E, Martinus Van der Lubbe, was a communist and that he had set fire to the Reichstag. Well, this last week, December the 30th, 1980, The verdict was cleared. Martinus van der Loop had been beheaded by Adolf Hitler in April 1934. And now the story is reversed, and they said that there was a tunnel linked from the Reichstag to Hermann Göring's residence. There were burn marks made by torches going into the building, that they beheaded this gentleman to as an excuse to round up the radicals and put them all in prison and start the reign of terror in Nazi Germany. And that the brother of this gentleman had asked for this trial or the hearing to be opened up, and the verdict was cleared, and he was acquitted last week posthumously of having started the fire. The article in the New York Times and also the San Francisco Chronicle said the new decision doesn't address itself as to who did set the Reichstag fire, but in the past years since 1934, it's been generally agreed and pretty well documented, even this article, that Göring and Adolf Hitler set it themselves to round up the radicals. Now, I mention this because Ronald Reagan works with those very people who set up this Reichstag fire and that kind of operation. So what you can expect from schools of sabotage, there's five of them in Texas. They're all over the country. You're going to see buildings burnt, train stations bombed, collisions of trains, airplanes falling, so-called kidnappings. There are going to be a series of murders, the kind that they used in Germany to get the emotions of people so aroused that they will beg for the police to take control. There was what they called the senseless, motiveless murder of a couple at Davis at the university up there. There was a senseless murder of a man leaving a disco dance place at 5 in the morning in Oakland. Motiveless crimes. We have a series of murders up at Mount Tamalpais. This country is going to see a rash of sabotage because they're being trained, according to newspaper articles, for this kind of thing. And the only purpose of this, the only purpose it used in Russia when the Tsars were there for terror, or in Germany or in Italy, is to give power to the police because people are totally helpless. And the only solution they can have to various acts of sabotage is the use of the police. So the only way to counteract this kind of violence is to investigate every so-called motiveless crime or every act of destruction and get to the source of it. This last week, a general died, an admiral, Nazi Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz. He is a name that many of you don't know if you don't read the newspapers or study history, and many of you know him. He was 89 years old, an interesting age because I have maintained that Adolf Hitler is 89 years old and could be located today. Dönitz was his buddy. Hitler managed to squeeze away. I believe that can be carefully documented. And he gave the government to Dönitz at the last minute for 23 days. So in April 1945, Dönitz took care of the German government. He was a member of the Nazi Party from its very beginning. And in May of 1945, he wanted the Nazis to quickly surrender so that he could lead them on to the peace agreements. He claims that the Bolsheviks were always a danger, that he was serving the best interests of Germany. And this, he served about 10 years in prison. He was released by John J. McCloy, who was later on the Warren Commission and High Commissioner of Germany. McCloy representing Chase Manhattan and Rockefeller interests and various multinationals, released almost all the Nazis after 10 years in prison. Dönitz bragged about the fact that he sunk 14 million tons of Allied shipping material, 52,000 tons the last 5 weeks of the war. He killed approximately 100,000 British merchant seamen. They lost their lives just in the Battle of the Atlantic. He was a great Navy person who killed many, many Allies into the hundreds of thousands. He had what you call the Atlantic Wolf Packs, and he had tremendous Navy force to sink U-boats and so forth. So Dönitz died this last week, age 89, which was a ripe old age, a lot longer than John Lennon lived, and he lived a very quiet, prosperous life in Germany. He was just in the hospital in the last 4 weeks before he finally succumbed. But it was a full life, and no matter what his war crimes were, the Allies felt kindly towards him, and 10 years, they felt, was enough time for him to serve. There are articles this week, another Nazi is going to either surface or commit suicide. Simon Wiesenthal has finally gotten off his butt and says he has information about Joseph Mengele's, the angel of death at Auschwitz. I've done radio broadcasts that Mengele was an American citizen at the time he experimented at Auschwitz. He lived in Germany quite comfortably after the war. He was never wanted at Nuremberg as a war criminal. He went to South America. According to the news stories now, there is a $50,000 reward for his arrest. There also was an article out of Tel Aviv saying that Simon Wiesenthal, the known Nazi hunter, thinks Mengele will either surface or commit suicide. And he says, we have common acquaintances with him, the Israeli intelligence and Wiesenthal, and that he is preparing his defense. I spoke with a gentleman who lives in Sacramento who obtained for me the FBI documents on Mengele being an American citizen and told me about a relative of his who is an associate of Mengele's. And he called me this last week because I thought he was talking about the news articles of Mengele surfacing. He has hundreds of articles from the National Archives, not articles, but documents, on the aliases of Mengele's and his whereabouts. And I thought he was going to confirm the catch that Wiesenthal is making. He told me that these stories in the news are fabricated and that probably the Mengele's they get will be cremated or will commit suicide. He said that he's absolutely positive that the man he used, Enderman, he used a lot of aliases. The documents say recently 9 different aliases he's used. This person told me that he's living right now in Nevada City in California, that he saw him and had coffee with him and his wife. Mengele was married in 1936, and that they're living in Nevada City, and that he feels he's sure that this is the man that worked with his uncle in Oakland during the war and was involved with Nazi operations because he was familiar with them before. He said the South American story is a lot of baloney, that he wouldn't stay down there in those hot deserts and not deserts, in the jungles of Paraguay, and that he feels that Mengele is not there at all, that if they pull him in, he'll be very much surprised because a man closely resembling him with the same accent and the same so-called wife or the family that he knew is currently in Nevada City. So Wiesenthal, who wrote the book, Boys from Brazil by Levin, was about Mengele and his experiments, and Wiesenthal wants to close in on him, but time will tell. Another book coming out, interesting, there's a lot of good books right now. This is a small publication, a book debunking the story of Admiral Byrd. And this goes again into Adolf Hitler's possible escape and donuts and the Nazi operations. This book is about a man who went down to Antarctica with Rear Admiral Byrd. He said he was vain, mystical, egocentric, and that he was built up by a political machine in Virginia. And he claims that he was the political admiral who took advantage of his brother's position in the Senate for his own ambitions. This book talks about the military explorations and has to do with State Department papers. It's called Assault on Eternity by Leslie A. Rose. And it has to do with participation in a 1956 Antarctic expedition. And there have been allegations or beliefs that Admiral Byrd knew and was familiar with the habitat of Adolf Hitler down in Antarctica. So I'm interested in this book. He goes into a thing that they called Operation High Jump, which was a massive World War II expedition that Byrd led to the Antarctic in 1946 and 1947. Now, the Byrd trip to Antarctica, all of these episodes are carefully locked up. And according to this writer, Mr. Rose, he says that the access to the papers remains guarded by the family, that Byrd had enemies, he had political connections, and that a lot of what he did and saw is locked up to this day. He also says that Drew Pearson challenged Byrd about various areas that were mapped out in Antarctica, and that Byrd had such political clout with Herbert Hoover and Roosevelt in the White House that you couldn't touch him. He also describes when Byrd came back to the Navy Yard in 1947 and met with Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal, who greeted him. That's interesting because I have a book on the murder of James Forrestal, that it was possibly one of the first assassinations of the government to test mind control. He was flown out of a window at Bethesda Hospital it was shortly after the Byrd expedition, one of the Byrd expeditions down there. So this book debunking Admiral Byrd's exploits, called Assault on Eternity, deals with the secrecy, with the politics, the experiences he had, which are locked up, and that he was way overblown, and also with Drew Pearson challenging Byrd. It seems that Drew Pearson was into a lot of stories before he died, which would almost make one investigate, if we could, how Drew Pearson died so young. One of the big stories just prior to his death was on the homosexual ring around Ronald Reagan in Sacramento. He exposed the Nixonberger connections and loans that were never paid back of the Howard Hughes empire to the Richard Nixon family. And he, when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, he was into the people around Ronald Reagan. And I didn't realize also that Drew Pearson was checking out the facts of Admiral Byrd. So with Donitz gone at 89 years of age, and the Byrd facts still locked up, and Forrestal dead, it would be interesting to get access, possibly someday, to the still secret papers to see what politics Admiral Byrd had with the Nazis, with Antarctica, and did he in fact see Adolf Hitler? There are allegations of this in some books, and it gives something to think about, realizing what happened to Forrestal. And as I say, the papers are locked up. And for those of you who said Adolf Hitler couldn't live to be 89, I repeat again that Donitz, his buddy, just died this week. Hitler was a vegetarian and had no smoking and no meats and was in a germ-free environment. So it is very possible, given the secrecy and the installations that were going on down in Antarctica, that he did indeed live there for a long time. I mentioned a man that sponsored Colonial Dignidad. This was the headquarters for Nazi assassination teams down in Chile that are still operating. It's known as Operation Condor. There's a name that I got from Amnesty International that I wanted to share, and I don't think I had it on the radio. And if you have a pencil and you do research or you have the tapes, it's Gerhard Mertens, Gerhard Mertins. Now, you researchers go out and find his name in books and articles and find as much as you can for me. He's from London. He's an arms merchant. He's as big as Samuel Cummings and the same kind of weaponry. And he sends money and financing down to Colonial Dignidad in Chile, which borders on Argentina, which has been the nesting place of the Nazis before and after and during World War II. I only have 5 minutes left, and I do want to, maybe next week, start with some of the missing millions. In the last week or so, while we've been doing the John Lennon story, there have been stories linking the Central Intelligence Agency, narcotics traffic, gun running, Libya, South America, the very same teams that I keep using over and over again. There's an article in the New York Times, January the 4th, today, a large story on an accused con man named Jack Bender, who had many, many aliases, who disappeared with approximately $60 million and left $22 million down in Paraguay. He has passports from all over the world and traveled between Hollywood and Switzerland and South America and London and Monte Carlo and so forth. Another article from the Houston Post Houstonian buried near Bolivian crash site. This has to do with a man, Frank Jeff Dyke Jr. from Houston, Texas, a director of Gulf Resources and Chemical Corporations, member of the Young President's Club, a very social, wealthy man from Houston, Texas, whose airplane crashed in Bolivia, and the body was found approximately 12 miles away from the plane. The body of this person and his companion, who's the son of an aluminum company executive in Pennsylvania, their bodies were found in coffins, and the plane was on its back, and then it had been turned over and burned. Large connections to multinational corporations, strange circumstances of why the plane was destroyed, and the farmer in the house had the key to the planes in his house. This plane was not registered to leave the United States. It never legally arrived in Bolivia. A lot of mystery and suggested large cocaine traffic. There was cocaine on the plane, but this would be an important link to Bolivia and Gulf and the Houston, Texas, Pennsylvania combine, and the two men were left in a coffin. Another article from Philadelphia Magazine, reprinted in the Washington Post, routine arrest leads police to the web of intrigue. This has to do with two brothers, Bradley Bryant and Larry Bryant, and in essence, it has to do with another $55 million of narcotics traffic and links to the Central Intelligence Agency, to stealing of weapons from United States bases, shipping them overseas, and then exchanging them for narcotics and reshuffling that. I added up about five articles just in the newspaper in the last 5 days or so, and then several from 2 months ago. $50 million missing from the Howard Hughes organization until he legally died. Another $131 had been missing, $131 million. $60 million swindle of this Jack Bender, another $22 million he left behind. This Philadelphia company involved $55 million in narcotics. The Florida marijuana arrest and two airplanes crashed involved another $55 million. And I mentioned on programs $55 million from the Nugan Hand Bank in Australia, involved with the CIA and assassination teams. And Michael Sindona is still before the courts in New York for other charges linked to $45 million from the Franklin National Bank. Well, I added up these stories. There's approximately $467 million floating between assassination teams, the CIA, narcotics traffic, and gun running. Now, that is a lot of money to be reading about in a newspaper in just a two-week period. Out of five or six articles, I totaled a $467 million floating fund, again, of Navy intelligence linked to CIA, linked to assassination teams, to South America, Libya, narcotics, and so forth. The tangled web of the Pentagon, the intelligence community, the gun runners, and the assassination teams is coming out every day in the newspapers. Save your articles. Put them away and look back years from now. It is a tangled web, but it's an interesting one. And it's lots of fun to read. This is the Comedy Hour, and you'll have a lot of fun reading about the floating 40 or 50 million missing next week. In the meantime, our time is out. We'll do more on that next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. Have a funny week, and I'll be back with you for the Mae Brussel Comedy Hour.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.